For as long as I can remember, I've always wanted to find the love of my life. Most of my friends found this cheesy, but I'd been dreaming about my Prince Charming ever since I was 16, and I always told myself that he was out there waiting for me to find him. The search for my true love wasn't easy, as none of my relationships seemed to last during my 20s. Things got even worse in my early 30s, but I didn't want to give up, as I knew I would soon find the man of my dreams. However, while I didn't know it at the time, my search for true love would almost cost me my life, and the disturbing story you're about to hear will explain why. I had always been an adventurous person in my dating life, so matching on dating apps and going out to flirt with strangers I found attractive at bars was not a problem for me. I often convinced myself that every relationship I entered would end in something beautiful. However, most of the people I was interested in usually wanted something different. One of the many attractive guys I met while flirting at the bar once told me that looking for true love was delusional, as he said, "Listen, sweetie, I'm only looking for a one-night stand. You're not going to find anyone if you keep searching for a non-existent Prince Charming." Most of the guys I went out on dates with were like this, and I found it incredibly infuriating as no one seemed to be looking for a genuine connection anymore. But just when I was about to give up on looking for the love of my life, I came across a man named Jim Myers. I met Jim on a dating app, and although he didn't have a proper picture of himself in his profile, he seemed so perfect when we texted that I decided to meet him in person. Jim was a tall guy with blonde hair and a beautiful smile. I could tell he was a bit shy, but he knew how to hold a conversation. During our first date, I remember asking him, "You look so good, Jim. Why didn't you put a proper picture of your face on your dating profile?" Jim shrugged before telling me that he didn't think he looked as good as I was making him out to be. Our first date went perfectly well, and by the time I got home, I was already picturing our family together. I even tried saying my name with his surname just to see how it sounded. Hanging out with Jim felt so right, and I always wanted to be around him. We'd already gone on a couple of dates, and he always sent me gifts after each one. But what surprised was that he hadn't tried to make a move ever since we'd been going out, and I didn't understand why. I couldn't tell if he was attracted to me or if he was just trying to be respectful. These thoughts kept eating at my mind, and it wasn't long before I asked him about it, saying, "Look, Jim, I can't tell if you're a traditional guy or if you don't really like me or my body, but I can't help but ask why you haven't made a move after all our dates together." Jim then smiled as he said, "It's not that I don't like you, Linda. On the contrary, you're a very beautiful woman. But I'm not into vanilla sex like most guys. I prefer extreme BDSM, and I was waiting for a more appropriate time to bring it up." I could feel my heart drop when he said those words, as I'd never liked the thought of engaging in bondage or anything related to it. I wanted to tell him, but I could see how hopeful he looked. And what was even worse was that I knew I couldn't tell him no, as I had already fallen for him. I was silent for a while, and Jim, who noticed how I reacted, took my hands and said, "It's okay, Linda. We don't have to do anything you don't want to do. It's only because you asked that I brought it up. I really like you, and I'm willing to do anything you're comfortable with." I then took in a deep breath and shook my head, saying, No, it's fine, Jim. What is life without trying new things anyway? And I'm going to do this for you because I really like you too." The smile on his face grew as he gave me a bear hug. Even though it wasn't my thing, I knew a lot of people enjoyed it, and I told myself that nothing could go wrong if I experienced it with Jim, as he was the sweetest guy I knew. He invited me to his house later that night, and after getting all dolled up, I made my way to Jim's house. I arrived at his home around 8, and I knocked on the door. Jim answered almost immediately, but when I saw him, I screamed and stepped back. Jim pulled me in, chuckling as he said, "Why did you scream like that?" Horrified, I managed to stutter the words, What's in your head?" Jim looked at me with a confused expression as he said, "Oh, I'm assuming you're talking about my mask of pain. I didn't mean to startle you, but wearing it puts me in the mood." Despite his explanation, I was still horrified because the thing Jim called the mask of pain was a ghastly cage made of barbed wire and rusted nails that he was wearing on his face. I could see him smiling as the barbed wire cut into his flesh, and I wanted to throw up. What surprised me the most was that Jim thought this was normal. I knew BDSM was intense, but this was something far more sinister. My overwhelming feelings for Jim slowly started to fade away as I kept looking at him because the man standing before me didn't look like my perfect Jim, and all I could see when I looked at him was a deranged psychopath. I knew I couldn't go through with it anymore, so I said, "This is too much for me, Jim. I'm sorry, but I think I'm going to go home." With an extremely furious look on his face, Jim responded saying, "This is why I didn't want to tell you. I knew you couldn't handle it, but I don't think I can let you leave so soon." Jim had a twisted look in his eyes now, and I didn't hesitate to bolt for the door, but he grabbed me before I could escape. I screamed and pleaded for my life, hoping that the man I loved would let me go. But all my pleas fell on deaf ears as Jim kept violently dragging me down to his basement. When we got there, he threw me on the floor. Right behind me was a rusty cell, and I could see dried blood all over the floor. My heart was in my throat now, and I was crippled with fear, but I screamed the words, "Please let me go! Someone help me, please!" Jim picked up a couple of lengthy chains and locks as he said, "Nobody can hear you, Linda. I made the basement soundproof because I wanted us to share our desires with no disturbance. I can tell you're stronger than the others, and I know you can survive this. What we have is a love to die for, and I'm sure you feel the same way." I was completely terrified now as I noticed he'd mentioned others, and I wondered how many women Jim had dragged down here to torture. In the minutes that followed, Jim chained me to the walls, and I watched in horror as he went to pick up a rusty axe. I screamed and begged him because I didn't want to die from an axe to the head. But rather than bringing the axe down on my head, Jim brought it down on my left hand. As soon as the rusty blade made contact with my bone, I let out a blood-curdling scream. Things only got worse from there, as his initial strike didn't take my whole hand off due to the rusty blade. I watched in horror as Jim repeatedly hacked at my hand until he took it off. There are no words to describe the unimaginable pain I felt as my left hand was violently amputated. I screamed until I lost my voice, and I couldn't stop crying from the pain. I noticed Jim got more excited with every scream I let out, and it was then I realized Jim wasn't going to kill me. He wanted to slowly chop me up into bits and watch me scream as I bled to death. I had lost a lot of blood at this point already, and I began to feel lightheaded. I couldn't take the pain anymore, and death seemed like a better option. But I didn't want to die, so I kept fighting. I gritted my teeth through the pain, and I looked around searching for anything that could help me escape. That's when I saw a loose water pipe on the wall. I reached for it and pulled it with all the strength I had left, and luckily, it came off. Jim was too busy enjoying the sight of my pain and struggling to notice what I was doing. I hid the pipe behind me and waited for Jim to attack again. When he did, I struck him with no hesitation. The chains were long enough for me to land a good blow, and he fell to the floor unconscious. My entire body was screaming in pain now, but I fought through it as I rummaged through his pockets and took the keys to the chains' locks. It was difficult to set myself free with one hand, but I eventually got the chains loose. I ran out of the house once I was free, screaming at the top of my lungs. It wasn't long before I was surrounded by the neighbors and passers-by in the area. They immediately called the cops and asked what happened, but I was too weak to speak. I didn't know how much blood I had lost at this point, but I found it extremely hard to keep my eyes open. I managed to utter the words, "Jim Myers," right before the world went dark. I woke a day later surrounded by doctors and police officers. I was informed by doctors that they weren't able to reattach my arm by the time I reached the hospital for surgery. After the doctors had spoken to me, the officers told me that they weren't able to arrest my attacker as he'd vanished before they arrived. I broke down crying in my hospital bed because I had not only lost my hand, but I'd also lost any form of justice I'd hoped to get. After I'd managed to put myself together, I told the authorities everything that happened. An investigation was immediately carried out into Jim Myers, and at the end of it all, it was revealed that the man named Jim Myers didn't exist, which meant he'd been using an alias. The authorities did everything they could to track him down, but Jim has never been found to this very day. 8 years have passed since this happened, and I can still remember every single detail of the horrific experience. Despite going through counseling, I have never been able to move on because I know Jim is still out there cutting up the unsuspecting women that he tricked into believing he's their Prince Charming. I know I'm one of the lucky few to survive, but it doesn't feel like it because every night in my dreams, he comes to take my other hand and tells me that our love is one to die for.
It was a night like any other at the restaurant. The tables were busy with customers enjoying their tacos, laughter filled the air, and the smell of delicious food mixed with the sound of ranchera music in the background. As you can imagine, I enjoyed my job. And that night I was enjoying it too, until he walked in. A tall, stocky man with an intense gaze and an expression that screamed trouble. He sat at a table in the corner of the restaurant. From the moment I saw him, I knew we were going to have trouble. Everyone was moving away from him and avoiding looking at him at all costs. And with good reason, since that man looked like he was looking for a fight from the moment he walked through the door. I tried not to pay too much attention to him and continued attending to the other customers, but I couldn't help noticing how he was looking around. It was a strange look. It was as if he was sizing everyone up while looking for some reason to snap. After a while, I finally decided to go to his table and ask him what he wanted. Make no mistake, we don't normally do this. People had to go to the cashier and place their order, but there were exceptions, and that man over there was an exception. I approached his table with a forced smile, trying to hide my nervousness. "Hello, what can I get for you?" The man stared at me for a moment. He was looking at me. It was as if he was feeling me out or trying to make me nervous before placing his order. We held the stare for a few seconds until he answered me.
"Meat tacos, extra everything. And make it quick."
I nodded and hurried to take his order to the kitchen, feeling his gaze on my back as I walked away. When I returned with his food, I expected that to be the end of our interaction, but I was wrong. As I ate, the man began to complain more and more about absolutely everything you can think of. He said the meat was cold, although he later said it was too hot, that the quality of the meat was bad, that the vegetables were not fresh, that the drink was overwatered. All this was a lie. All the other customers were very happy with their food, and this man was made with even more care. Worst of all, I was very close to him. Since I was the one who had served him, my manager told me that I should keep an eye on him. Seeing how this man was something different, the man was eating with his mouth open, chewing everything slowly. Each bite was more violent than the other, and I could see absolutely everything he ate in detail. I tried to calm him down and offer him a solution. I could bring him another taco, I could heat his food. Hell, we could even let him go without paying, but he seemed determined to make a scene.
"Do you want to fix this? You want me to calm down? How can you make up for ruining my night with this awful meal? Not charging me? You should pay me!"
"Sir, I understand that you didn't like it, but we can't give you money."
"I don't want your dirty money made from cheating these people with your garbage food. I want this place shut down. This place is disgusting. You are all disgusting."
His tone of voice became increasingly aggressive, and I could feel the tension in the air as the other customers began to look on with concern. That's when everything got out of control. The man suddenly jumped out of his chair with a scream of rage, sending his plate of tacos flying through the air. Sauce and meat sprayed everywhere, staining the tables and walls. The entire restaurant fell silent, frozen in shock at what had just happened. I stared at the man in disbelief, trying to understand what had triggered his explosion of anger. But before I could do or say anything else, the man lunged at me with a roar, his fists clenched and his eyes filled with fury. Instinctively, I backed away and tried to escape into the employees' lounge by running, feeling my heart hammering in my chest as I desperately tried to think of how to defend myself. The man lunged at me, knocking over tables and chairs in his path. I shouted for help, but people only pretended to approach me and avoided confronting this huge, terrifying man. I got into the employee side where some coworkers tried to stop him, but the man was furious and started beating them brutally until he single-handedly knocked all three of them down and lunged at me again. I tried to fight back, but I had no chance. The huge man grabbed me by the neck and threw me against a door. You can imagine how strong this man was just by knowing that the wooden door came off on impact. In pain, I tried to crawl towards a glass bottle that I could use as a weapon, but he grabbed my legs and pulled me back. Furious, he began to stomp violently on my back. His stomp was so hard, I felt like my back was going to break and snap me in half. My coworkers tried to throw themselves at him again, but he hit them again, more and more furious to the point where he was about to kill them. I stretched a little more and, full of pain, managed to grab the glass bottle, but before I could use it, he kicked me hard in the head. After that, I was completely out of my mind. I was very dizzy and confused. I lost all sense of direction, and even though I knew I had blood in my nose, I felt no pain. I was as if anesthetized. It was at that moment that I realized that no matter what happened, I was destined to suffer this from the moment the man decided to come to Taco Bell. No matter what, he was going to find a reason to get angry. A reason to attack the poor devil who decided to treat him. Do you know how I figured this out? By his smile. He was enjoying this. He didn't want a taco. He didn't want to eat. He didn't want to complain. He wanted to beat someone to death. He was enjoying this. I felt like I was going to die, and this man was going to be my killer. Once he finished with my companions, he turned to me with a huge grin on his face. He was about to step on my face, knowing that this might break my jaw, but I saved myself. The security men threw themselves at him, and even though the psycho had wounded one of them, the other one managed to take him down, and with the help of my colleagues, they stopped him. I could hear the police nervously entering the front door, and at that moment, the psycho made one last attempt to escape. He managed to free himself from the grip of all my coworkers, but instead of attacking me once more, he ran out the back door, and that was the last time I saw him. The security employees approached me, asking me if I was okay. I had an impulse that brought out the worst in me, and I asked them what took them so long. Their answers froze me in my tracks. They both told me that they came very quickly since everything that happened, from the time the man exploded until they arrived from the parking lot, happened in less than a minute. I was immediately sent to the hospital and was found to have several broken bones. Since then, I have avoided Taco Bell. But every time I walk past it, I can't help but remember the night a man with anger issues turned an eating place into the scene of a nightmare. And though I survived to tell the tale, nothing guarantees that tomorrow I might run into him again, and if he remembers me, he might finish what he started and kill me. Hello, my name is Douglas Escobar. I've been an Uber driver for a few years, but I already have a lot of experience on the road, since before that, I was a truck driver for more than 25 years. The story I have to tell you may seem unbelievable, but it's true. In all the time I've been driving, I've seen all kinds of impressive things, but nothing like what I saw that night, and believe me, I'm a very hard person to impress. It all started during a completely normal night. I don't know if you know this, but we Uber drivers don't just transport people, we also transport objects. I was making small trips until I suddenly received a notification on my app. It was to transport a small box according to the client. He had to give it to his girlfriend, who worked in a 24-hour veterinary. I only received this type of trip once every few months, so I wasn't going to waste the opportunity to take it. Not that this type of trip pays better or has any special benefits, it's just that, having been a truck driver for so long, I was used to traveling alone and missed it a bit. I drove to the meeting point where I was supposed to meet Pierce, the customer who was supposed to give me the small box. I drove until I reached an apartment that was quite old and in terrible condition. The neighborhood didn't look too dangerous, so I wasn't too afraid to wait in that area, although I must admit that the apartment looked out of place. While I was waiting for Pierce, I checked the detail he left me once again, as there were some things that didn't quite fit. The message said that I had to go into the vet's office and ask for Helen, and say that the box was from her boyfriend. Was this a surprise, and Helen wasn't expecting him to come? If so, why would she send him a surprise in an Uber and not him if it was only a 7 or 8 block ride? While I was asking myself all these questions, I saw that the waiting time was ticking away, but Pierce still didn't open the door of the apartment. I looked one more time and thought I saw him. Behind the two apartment doors, there was a man waving at me, waving his hand. I looked back at the Uber app to remember Pierce's name when in as little as 2 or 3 seconds I looked down. Suddenly, the customer was next to me. Oh, you're Pierce, aren't you? Yes, sir. Sorry I'm late. This Pierce guy, there was something strange about him. He seemed very kind and polite. He had a soft and gentle smile. Something about him made me very uncomfortable. I felt that if I stayed too long near him, something bad would happen to me. But you know what was the weirdest thing? He didn't seem like a bad guy. I didn't feel like he was planning something or trying to do something bad to me. It just gave me a bad feeling. Excuse me, sir. Is something wrong? No, I'm sorry. I just blanked out for a second. Tell me, I have to take this box to the vet, right? Yes, it's very important that I do. If Helen asks, tell her that as strange as it may seem to her, it was me who sent it to her. You can describe me if she doesn't believe you. Okay, is there anything else I should know?
No, that's all. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Hey pal, you forgot to pay me.
As soon as this man peered out of nowhere, he disappeared. The door to his apartment was still closed, the elevator was nowhere near, and no one near us looked confused. I didn't understand how that Pierce guy had done that, but I was happy to leave as soon as possible. The place was giving me a very bad feeling. I drove a few blocks to the vet's office. Once I got there, I got out of the car and asked for Helen.
The vet was empty. It was pretty hidden for a vet that was open 24 hours a day, but I was sure that sooner or later I would have a client. I could tell it was a pretty good place. Once Helen came out, she looked at me curiously, not knowing who I was. I gave her the box and she grabbed it without understanding what was going on. When I told her who it was from, her eyes got as big as lanterns, and then she started crying and ran away. At the same time, the other veterinary employee got angry with me and invited me to leave, but not before insulting me from top to bottom. I wanted to tell the girl to pay me, but I could see that it would be impossible. I was about to give Pierce a negative rating and file a complaint with Uber when suddenly someone knocked on my window. It was Helen, who was still crying but still approached my car.
Are you sure that box was given to you by Pierce? Is that the man in this picture?
In the photo, you could see Pierce and Helen kissing. There was no doubt it was the same person who gave me the box. Yeah, it was him. There was no doubt.
Pierce has been missing for over 2 months. I'm sorry I didn't believe him. It just seemed implausible that if Pierce was really here, he would send a box and he wouldn't come. Unless he couldn't.
Miss, I'm sure of what I saw. He came out of an apartment a few blocks from here and came to give me that box.
His apartment? Listen, I guess he didn't pay you for your trip, did he?
Oh, speaking of that...
And the box he gave me was a cell phone. His cell phone. As soon as I turned it on, I saw a picture. I know that picture. Pierce and I were riding our bikes there. Can you give me a ride? I'll pay for the last ride in this one.
I'm sorry, I don't think I can. I have to meet a minimum of Uber trips, and I don't think I should get into this.
Oh, okay. I understand.
With that said, Helen left disappointed with the cell phone in her hand. A few seconds later, I was ready to start a new trip. My cell phone started ringing, and before I accepted the ride, I noticed that the client was a few meters away. It was Helen. Okay, why not? After I accepted the ride, the door of the vet's office opened again, and out came Helen in a jumpsuit. During the trip, Helen began to tell me some of the things that had happened. Everything was going well between Pierce and Helen, but one day, he left and just didn't come back. Helen told me how over the next few days, strange things started happening in their house. Chairs began to move by themselves, her room began to feel colder, and at times, she felt watched. All until one night. That night, Helen woke up in the wee hours of the morning. She felt someone knocking on her door. Still hoping it was Pierce or the police giving her bad news, she ran desperately to the front door. She looked through the hole in the door and there he was. Pierce was just standing there, waiting for her as he always used to do when he came to visit her. Excited and in tears, Helen opened the door and behind her, there was no one there. Helen looked around, confused, and saw footprints with dirt walking up to her doorway, but there were no footprints indicating that whoever had walked up to the door had left. Wait, so you're suggesting that Pierce's...
I know he's dead. That's why I got that way when you mentioned it. But that's also why I believed you that he might have given you that box.
But why me? What do I have to do with it?
I guess nothing. Maybe you were at the wrong time and place.
Story of my life. Did you see that? That was your boyfriend. He was at my window. This doesn't make any sense.
Is this it?
What?
The picture that was on Pierce's cell phone. That's it.
Helen desperately gets out of the car and runs to the dirt road. No cars are passing and the place is totally uninhabited.
Here, there is something.
Before I could see what was happening, Helen started digging in the dirt and I went to help her. After a few minutes, we found it. Pierce's body was already in the ground, decomposing. Helen wanted to hug him, but I quickly pushed her away and restrained her. This was a crime scene. We called the police and once they came, Pierce's case was ruled a homicide. With all the new leads, checking cameras, and talking to neighbors, they were able to piece together what had happened. A few minutes before the disappearance, cameras spotted Pierce walking between two men. Pierce looked terrified, clearly walking against his will, most likely threatened. Over the weeks, Helen told me that they managed to find these two men. The stories they had from that day were different from each other. Neither of them expected to be caught. One of them confessed the truth. At first, they tried to rob Pierce, but one thing led to another, and seeing him so nice and friendly, they beat him to death on the road, then buried him and left. Since that day, Helen and I have been great friends, as I am also from the same neighborhood. In time, she was able to rebuild her life. Unlike me, she never saw Pierce again. She no longer needed to, she knew he was at peace. As for me, I saw him one more time. One day, I was finishing a trip near the apartment where Pierce had given me the box. As I passed by that apartment, I saw Pierce once again. He was staring at me, bowing his head with a smile, a sign of thanks.
Hey, my name is Arnold. A few years ago, I used to work at a Starbucks in a small town. My favorite shift was the night shift. The quietness of the place after the crowd dispersed, the soft music in the background, and the happiness of all my coworkers who were about to go home. I enjoyed my job at Starbucks while I was there, but the reason I left that job was because one night, everything changed. It was one of those quiet late fall nights. Closing time was approaching and I was finishing cleaning the bathrooms. Admittedly, cleaning my bathrooms at night was not my favorite thing to do, but luckily we had a policy of cleaning them once an hour, so I had very little work to do. On this particular day, I was a bit annoyed by an electrical problem. As I was cleaning, the lights started to fail and flicker. I didn't think much of it. I thought it was just a common electrical fault, but it was still bothering me a lot, as it was hindering my work and making it take a little longer to clean up and make sure everything was perfect so I wouldn't get into trouble the next day. I was about to leave, I figured everything was clean enough, but suddenly I heard a strange noise behind me. I turned quickly, but there was no one there. I shook my head and continued to gather my things to leave, although I admit that at that moment I was trying to ignore the feeling that something wasn't right. I was standing by the door when I remembered something. I hadn't cleaned up yet, I had forgotten about the last toilet. As I did so, a shiver ran down my spine. I felt as if someone was watching me. I looked up and found my reflection in the mirror, but something was wrong. My eyes, they were black. Completely black. I flinched and ran quickly to the mirror to make sure that what I was seeing was correct, and no, my eyes were perfect. Why were they black a few seconds before? Just in case, I looked away, telling myself that I was just tired and nervous for nothing. I finished cleaning up and was heading for the exit door when, to my utter surprise and bewilderment, I heard a noise behind me. Someone was banging on a door behind me. That was no casual noise. It wasn't an insect, it wasn't a rat, and it wasn't the wind. That was a knock, knock, knock in perfect sync and volume. But how was that possible? I had just cleaned all the toilets. There was no way anyone could have been hiding in the bathroom. Not without me hearing it. I quickly turned around and crouched down to look under the toilet doors. There were no feet under any of them. The sound! I was hearing it again. This time it was much clearer. It was coming from under the third door. This was impossible. There had to be an explanation for this, but I wasn't going to find out unless I went and opened the door. Slowly and scared, I walked towards the door. I thought about telling some of my classmates, but no one would believe me. Apart from the jokes, they would all think I was completely crazy. I took courage and walked determinedly towards the door. I lied to myself, making myself believe that nothing would happen, but I was terrified. Once I got to the door, I tried to open it, but it was locked. That's right, I had locked it. If someone had wanted to get in, they would have had to climb through the door and I would have heard them. I admit that gave me some peace of mind as I put the key in and opened the door. Once I opened it, I looked inside, but as I suspected, there was no one there. Oh hell, the power's out. I'm sure it's the generator. Should we go check it out or can we do it tomorrow? Arnie, how much longer will you take? We're on our way out. As soon as I heard the voice of my coworkers, I ran desperately to the exit door. I tried to open it with all my might, but it was locked. Someone had locked it and my keys were no longer in my pocket. Guys, please, you must come. Help me. I'm stuck with someone. Come here now. Suddenly, I heard several footsteps running up to the door, and when they arrived, they started knocking on it. Guys, why are you banging on the door? Just open it. The pounding started to get louder and more intense. Every knock I felt on the door made me more and more dazed. I began to feel a whistling sound in my head that screeched along with the banging. The noise made me dizzy. It made me feel sick. The pounding felt like torture that refused to stop, and with the helplessness and desperation I felt, I could only fall to the floor and cry, "Please, please stop! Stop it! Stop it!" And out of nowhere, as if they had heard me, the sound ended. At that very moment, a ray of light hurt my closed eyes. The light had returned. Guys, the light is back. Are you there? But nothing. There was no one behind the bathroom door. Still confused, I looked once more to the front, and that's when I saw her again. The girl dressed as a schoolgirl was sitting on the toilet, subtly tapping the side of the wall to make noise. The girl looked normal, but it was very obvious that she was not.
Just like my reflection in the mirror a few minutes earlier, her eyes were completely dark. Even though she was staring at me, she wasn't angry, she wasn't looking at me with hatred, and she didn't seem to be mocking me either. Her face was completely neutral while her body trembled nervously, as if she was about to attack me. My only reaction was to move slowly towards the exit as if making a quick movement would cause that girl to get out of her seat and attack me. Once I reached the exit door, I opened it slowly, and as I did so, I heard the door of the bathroom where that girl was close by itself.
Hey, are you okay?
Oh god! Oh, you scared me!
Oh, I'm sorry. What did you do there? You've been there for ages.
Nothing. It just took me a little longer because of the blackout.
Blackout? What are you talking about?
Nothing. There was a power problem inside the bathroom. Forget I mentioned it. I'm ready. Let's go.
And that's how, without saying anything, I just left Starbucks.
I know I said nothing to my coworkers, but can you blame me? I didn't know what that girl was, I didn't know why she had shown up, and I didn't know why she had let me go. I just knew that if I said anything to my classmates, not only would they not believe me, but I could also make that girl want to attack me again. As you can imagine, that was my last day working at Starbucks. I never saw that girl again, although I heard Asian urban legends that told stories very similar to mine. I never really investigated anything else about her and never went near that Starbucks again, but I did hear something about it. Richard, my coworker that I ran into coming out of the bathroom, was reported missing a few weeks after I left. No one ever heard from him, although if I can be honest, I suspect that's what happened. After I left, maybe he was assigned to clean the bathrooms at the time of departure, and if that's what happened, I guess Richard wasn't as lucky as I was. Hey guys, my name is Ethan, and I'm going to tell you the story of when I was a pizza delivery guy. I'm sure you're thinking that nothing is interesting about being a pizza delivery guy, right? Well, let me tell you how wrong you are. Being a pizza delivery guy, we encounter the most bizarre situations you can imagine. Everyone orders pizza, so we see all kinds of people. When I worked at the pizzeria, this was something that I found funny. Until I met the wrong family. The last family I ever brought a pizza to. It all started one day when I had to deliver a pizza to a low-income family on the other side of town. I knew it was a relatively dangerous place, but I had been there many times. I just had to make sure that no one passed by the same place twice. If that happened, I knew I had to leave as soon as possible, as they might steal my bike. I was very cautious until I arrived at the house. I admit that before I got there, I was pretty scared. I was going to a part I had never been to before, to a part of the neighborhood I didn't even know existed. Most of the houses were abandoned and everything looked very deserted. I admit that at that moment I hated being in one of the few pizzerias that had such a large delivery. Once I got to the house, I admit to being surprised. The house, it wasn't too bad, it seemed quite big and was very well kept. I didn't notice anything strange about it, and around it, I didn't feel that I could be robbed because the place was empty. I got off the bike looking everywhere in case someone was hiding, but that was the kind of neighborhood where you had no place to hide. I rang the doorbell with the two customers' pizzas, and after waiting a few seconds, a woman opened the door. The woman seemed nice, but incredibly tired. She had dark circles under her eyes and looked like she was about to fall asleep from exhaustion. But other than that, she didn't seem like a bad person. She looked at me with a relaxed smile and was even counting tips to give me. I turned around and, just out of curiosity, looked inside the house. It looked a bit messy, but normal. Inside was a man on a couch in front of a TV. The man was slumped in his seat, sleeping soundly. They both looked very tired, probably having just come home from work. As the woman was tipping me, I was thinking about which route to take back to the pizzeria when a scream alerted me.
Ah!
The scream was a child's, and it came from the other side of the house, from a room I couldn't see. The man stood up in alarm, and the woman's face changed from relaxed to completely alarmed. At that moment, I didn't think anything strange. Surely her son must have been hurt, but it was the woman's reaction that made me worry.
Oh, it looks like your child is getting into trouble.
Yes, we don't have children. I'm sure it's the TV in the other room. I left it on. Maybe it's on high volume.
I remember at the time being very confused. I had just made a joke. Why was she so nervous? Besides, it was obvious she was lying. There was no way that was a television. That was a child's voice, and that was very clear. I could see from here the man who was sleeping on the couch. He looked very nervous, too, and he was clutching his head nervously. Something was wrong here. I decided to ignore what had happened and thank the woman for the tip and leave, but as I was on my way to the bike, I couldn't help but ask myself a lot of questions. What was going on? Why would someone react like that to a simple joke? What if that child was in trouble? What if that couple were not his parents, and they were kidnappers? I knew I should leave or at least call the police, but I didn't feel good about myself doing it. Because of my fear and indecision, I might be condemning an innocent boy. I gathered my courage and went to knock on the door again. But what would that accomplish? By doing that, I was putting myself in danger. I decided to be smarter and go around the house. Maybe there was a back door, a window, or something that would help me get a broader picture of the situation. I walked stealthily through the courtyard. They didn't have any locked doors, dogs, or anything that could give me away. When I got to their yard, I saw a closed window, and inside was a child. The child was in a chair tied tightly with a bag over his head. So I was right. What kind of monsters could do this to a poor child? I quickly called the police and quietly told them what was going on. They said they would send someone to the area. I was about to get back on my bike and wait, but you know, the police wouldn't come in the back and rescue the kid. They were sure to cause a mess and it might end up in a hostage situation. In front of me, I had a chance. I had to do something. I gathered my courage and tried to open the window. To my surprise, it wasn't locked. I went into the room and slowly walked towards the boy, making sure that no one opened the door. I approached the door opening and could see the couple from before desperately eating pizza silently. Next to them walking, I saw another man, but I couldn't see him clearly. He was walking very fast in the opposite direction of the room. This was my chance. "Hey kid, I've come to rescue you. Now I'm going to untie you. I need you to be quiet, okay?" The boy didn't answer me anything, but he reacted to what I said with surprise, nodding quickly. I approached the boy and untied him quickly. I pulled the bag off his head and the boy gasped for air. He was running out of air, and if I didn't rescue him, he might have fainted. The moment I let go, the boy jumped on me and gave me a huge hug, crying. At that moment, I couldn't help but feel sorry for him. Who knows what happened in this house? I was thinking of grabbing the boy and escaping through the window, but I realized that something was wrong. The boy kept hugging me, but he was hugging me tighter and tighter. From one moment to the next, the hug went from comforting to painful. This boy had a lot of strength. It was as if he was breaking my bones. His arms felt cold, so cold that they were hurting my neck. I used all my strength to free myself from the boy, but it was impossible. He just had too much strength. "Thank you for saving me, Ethan, but you should have left the pizzas and gone away." As soon as he said this, the boy let go of me and I desperately ran out of the room. I jumped to the window, but it closed by itself and caught my fingers. Ah! I tried to open the window, but it was stuck. To make matters worse, I was stuck with my fingers broken under the window. Meanwhile, the boy was slowly approaching, laughing his head off. I swear his face was not the same as it was a few seconds ago. Now it was deformed and distorted. It was like a demon. Immediately, I heard someone knocking on the door. Surely it was the boy's parents, but the door was locked and they couldn't open it either. Once the boy stood next to me, he whispered one more thing. "Never feel alone, Ethan. We're always watching you, as we will be watching your daughter, too."
What do you mean?
Before I could finish the question, he put his little hands on my cheekbones and started squeezing them very hard. My cheeks felt like they were sinking in. It was like a feeling of heat and pressure that I had never felt in my life. I felt like the boy was going to pierce my face and destroy it like a fruit. I screamed in pain, thinking I was going to die for sure, when the door behind me exploded. The boy's parents, along with two other men dressed as priests, rushed into the room and grabbed the boy as if he were a wild animal. The boy put up no resistance, just looked at me, laughing loudly, as if he had been satisfied with the mischief he had done. In desperation, I made one more attempt to open the window, and it opened easily. The boy's parents approached me worriedly, asking if I was okay, but I ignored them and ran desperately, escaping across the yard to my bike. Once I got there, I started my bike and left the place as soon as possible, crying. On the way, I ran into the police. Who knows what was about to happen in this house? That same day, I quit the pizzeria and locked myself in my house all night crying. I never fully recovered from that day, and even though years have passed, I still think of that night as if it was yesterday. Do you know what was the reason I couldn't stop thinking about it? A few days before that happened, my girlfriend told me that she had a surprise for me when we met. That surprise was a test. She was pregnant. Today, every time I see my daughter, I can't forget that child's words. "Don't ever feel alone, Ethan. We are always watching you, as we will be watching your daughter."
Okay, Rick. We heard you were ready to talk. If you want to tell us everything, from start to finish.
I don't know if you'll believe me.
Give it a try. You have no idea the things that we have heard.
Okay, I'll tell you how it all started. It started on a Friday night. I remember it was pretty dark that day. I was leaving my house and my Uber had already arrived. I remember I had a big fight with my mother because she wouldn't let me go to my best friend's house. After all, it was too late. Can you imagine? I'm 23 years old and my mother thought she could forbid me to go out. I remember checking the driver's license plate just in case, and it matched. The driver was Eric. All in all, he seemed like a completely normal guy, nothing that caught my attention. I got into the car and was surprised to see the space inside. It was a very big and luxurious car, the kind you don't see in Uber. What surprised me the most, and I don't even know if it's legal, is that I couldn't see the driver. He had his back turned, and a large space prevented me from getting close enough to try to see his face. Once I got in, the ride began immediately without the man saying a word to me. I greeted him, but he didn't answer me. I was feeling quite uncomfortable until suddenly, he spoke to me in an incredibly natural way.
Hello, how are you this evening?
Oh, hi, I'm fine, thanks for asking. And so our journey began. The road was quite long, and according to the app, I would arrive in 24 minutes. Normally it would be a pretty long ride, but in Uber, everything was shorter, although I admitted that I was still pretty annoyed with my mother. I mean, it's not my fault that we live so far from the city center. The minutes passed and the trip was going pretty fast. The driver was nice. I mean, he was a strange man, extremely cheerful. He didn't seem at all like the same man who ignored me as soon as I got into the car. He seemed to want to engage me in conversation at all times, which didn't bother me. I needed to distract myself a little bit after the fight with my mother. Everything was going normal, but from one moment to the next, the conversation became much more personal. And tell me, do you live with your family?
Yes, I live with my mother.
Huh, you look a little uncomfortable with the question.
I just fought with my mother. She didn't want me to go to my friend's house, so we had a big argument, and here I am.
Oh, sorry to bring up the subject.
No problem.
But if you'll let me bring it up, mothers can be quite invasive. They never let their kids grow up. Kids are kids and will always be kids to them.
You got that right, brother.
Whatever the case may be, there's no reason to do what you did.
What? What do you mean?
Just ignore that I said something.
His tone of voice had changed. There was something strange about him. Suddenly, I started to feel uncomfortable. I pulled back and started to use my cell phone. I didn't know the way, but I knew I would be there soon. I looked at my cell phone to see how much time I had left, and that's when I saw something that scared me. According to the Uber app, I would arrive at my destination in 38 minutes. Where was I? Where was this person taking me? Was this my Uber driver? I tried to stay calm and pretend I didn't know what was going on. The smartest thing I could do now was pretend I wasn't scared.
Hey, excuse me. I think the app is bugged. Sometimes it happens to me. Can you tell me how close we are to my friend's house?
We spent a few seconds in silence since he didn't answer me. He didn't even turn around for me to see his face.
Hey, can you hear me?
You shouldn't have done it, Rick.
What? Do what? I don't know what you mean.
Was it worth it?
Suddenly, I could tell the car was getting faster and faster.
I looked both sides of the window and realized that we were on the road. At what point had we arrived here? This man was not taking me to my friend's house. I was scared the whole time, but it was only then that I felt my life was really in danger. As I realized what was happening, I could see the car speeding up more and more.
Hey, where are we?
Answer me, did your mom deserve what you did to her?
I don't know what you're talking about, please slow down, you're going too fast.
Suddenly, the man turned around and I saw his face for the first time. It was horrible. His mouth, his eyes, his hair, he was melting. I could see the burnt skull behind his melted skin. As the car kept accelerating on its own, without him pressing the accelerator, I began to cry desperately. Was this a nightmare? Where was I? I closed my eyes as tightly as I could, hoping to wake up and end whatever I had been living.
No! You are not having a nightmare, and you don't have the right to close your eyes. You will see everything! Why, Rick? Why did you do that to your mom?
I don't know what you're talking about. Leave me alone!
Yes! You know what I'm talking about. Would you like me to remind you? You argued with your mom. You tried to run away from home and she stopped you. You pushed her and she broke her neck. Don't you remember? You ran away like the coward you are. You couldn't stop running and you couldn't stop thinking about the image of your mom with her neck broken, dead on the floor.
No.
Yes. Did you think you could run away?
Where did you ask me to take you?
To my friend's house. Please let me go. Don't you remember why your mom didn't let you go? You don't have any friends. You've never met anyone. Do you know why? Because you're completely crazy. You're a murderer, and on top of that, you're completely crazy. Isn't that funny? No, 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 no!
And that's all I remember. I see, Rick. I'm glad you were able to tell us what you remember.
Oh, God! Do you think he'll get better?
I don't know. He needs a lot of treatment and, more than anything, time.
Why do you think he thinks he murdered me?
It's too quick to define, but there are several indications that we're dealing with schizophrenia. How did you find him after he ran away?
We argued. He ran off. And when I came down to look for him, he was in an abandoned car in front of the house, crying.
Possibly he saw this car and linked it to an Uber. Rick's mind is very complex. From our side, we'll do everything we can to get him better so he can live a life that says normal.
Being an Uber driver, I've heard a lot of terrifying stories from fellow Uber drivers. However, I'm a practical man. I know sometimes your mind can play tricks on you, and you can see or feel things that are not real, but are just a fragment of your imagination. Until that fateful day. It was a regular night in Seattle. The weather was dull as usual. Rainy, damp, and cold. I usually prefer to drive my Uber at night, as the fare was good, and there was less traffic on the road. I live close to a famous club in the city, so most of the time my first clients are the drunk youngsters getting out of the club. It's truly disappointing to see so many capable young people waste their lives on drugs and alcohol every night. But what can I say? I was the same when I was their age. Otherwise, I wouldn't be stuck driving an Uber. Nevertheless, it's for the best that it's me dropping off these youngsters at home instead of some random driver who can either rob them or take advantage of them. Believe me when I tell you I sleep better knowing a drunk and unconscious girl is safe at her home because I dropped her off with her other friends. This day was like no other. I got a notification on my Uber driver's app that I had to pick up a passenger from the club. I backed my car out of my front yard and drove to the club. Right in front of the club, on the sidewalk, was a group of people. From their clothes and the way they carried themselves, I could easily tell all of them were corporate employees. It was a group of like 15 people. All the people were hugging and bidding farewell to a girl among them. She was slender, brunette, wore a pantsuit, and looked the most elegant amongst them all. She too was talking to all of them and hugging them. I watched the show for a few minutes and then honked my car's horn to let my passengers know that I was there to pick them up. Somehow, I knew it was one of them. To my surprise, hearing my car's horn, the brunette turned and started walking towards me. She got into the back seat, put her handbag beside her, fastened her seatbelt, and told me the OTP code when I asked her for it. It would take me almost an hour to drop her at her address, navigating the night traffic. She did not seem drunk. Usually, it's my observation that whenever I give a ride to young people, if they aren't drunk or hungover, they prefer to bury their noses in their cell phones. Social media has everyone's attention these days. But not this girl. She was staring out of the window at all the vehicles passing by and the faint raindrops falling on the window. I prefer not to have a conversation with my passengers. I prefer the quiet and the road, rather than having small talk with different people every 20 minutes. But this girl surprised me and spoke first.
Do you ever think about death?
She asked. An absurd question for such a young woman to ask, but being my age, you do think about death once in a while. So I answered her honestly. I do. Sometimes.
It must be nice being this old,
she said. And then chuckled. Hardly. Your joints hurt. You can't move fast. You can't eat without your digestion cycle messing up. The list goes on.
It's so nice you get to experience all of that.
That statement from her kind of surprised me. I mean, who wants to be old, right? You think being old is nice. Having noisy joints and the need to still work at this age is nice.
At least you got to experience life for that long. Some of us aren't that lucky, you know.
She said, resting her head on the glass. Why would you say that? Now I was confused.
My colleagues were throwing me a going-away party there in the club. I quit my current job. I told them I was going to Germany because I accepted a better position there, when, in reality, I have no job offer in Germany. The truth is that I'm dying. Stage 4 blood cancer. There's no cure. Treatment can make me lose a year at most, but honestly, I feel like I have a few weeks, a couple of months if I'm lucky. I quit the job because I'll die soon. I have no family. I'm an orphan, and no husband or boyfriend either. My only family was those people whom I worked with in the office every day, and now I have said goodbye to them all as well. I don't want to burden any of them with my sickness. It's better to just go alone. But I envy you. I really wish I could live long enough to experience the joint pain and the sleepless nights and the crying and laughter of my grandkids. You really are lucky.
I was stunned, to say the least. I was not expecting such deep words to come from the young woman in the back seat. She kept on talking for a while, told me some memories from the foster home she grew up in, and then some from her college. She told me about her dreams and her fears. All I did was patiently listen as I drove the car. Tears were rolling down her cheeks as she spoke. We were approaching her destination, and I felt deeply sad for her. All the things we take for granted. Suddenly, she made me stop the car in front of a small ice cream shop.
"Will you have a cup of ice cream with me?"
she asked with watery eyes. I could not say no. "Sure." We silently had a scoop of ice cream each, and then she got into the car. I started driving, and we were only a mile away from her home, and the road was comparatively deserted as she lived on the outskirts of the city. For the rest of the ride, she reached out her hand partially out of the window and made waves with her palm. Then, while leaving, she paid me with cash and said the most heartbreaking thing ever.
"Thanks for having the ice cream with me. I didn't want to have it alone, as I have no one left in the world."
I could not hold back my own tears as I drove away. For that night, I did not take any more passengers. I returned home and cried a bit. A few months passed, and I had totally forgotten about the woman. I was driving back into the city and passed in front of the ice cream shop. I thought I should stop and have a scoop of ice cream there. It was an intense feeling. The moment I stepped into the ice cream parlor, got a scoop, and walked towards one of the tables, my eyes landed on the woman sitting at the back table. She was the same girl who I dropped off all those months ago. I walked towards her, and she instantly recognized me.
"Oh, it's you again. It's nice to have company while eating ice cream, you know."
I nodded and stared at her. She seemed much happier and more cheerful than before. I wanted to ask her if she was okay, how her treatments were going, but I just sat quietly and ate ice cream. She spoke about the weather and other such miscellaneous things. I just listened while she spoke. Later, when I went to pay for the ice cream, I told the boy to add the woman's bill to mine as well. That's when he looked at me funny and asked me, "Which girl?" I turned to look at the back table to find it empty. There was no girl there. I asked the boy at the counter if he saw the girl there sitting with me, when he told me I was sitting on the back table all alone. This shocked me, and I paid for the ice cream and left. Later that night, when I was thinking about my second encounter with the woman, I think it was her soul's way of visiting me one last time. I was scared, but also content to know that wherever the woman's soul was, it seemed happy.
Hello, guys. My name is Anna, and I used to be a food delivery girl. During that time, I was studying to be a doctor. I don't come from a wealthy family, so I needed to have some income to be able to continue my studies. But I also had to have time to study. I didn't know how to solve this, but the answer came quicker than I thought. A few blocks from my house, there was a Chinese restaurant, and they needed someone to take food orders to the neighbors' houses. They had known me since I was a little girl, and they knew that I needed a job, and that I drove a small motorcycle, so they were happy to see me as soon as I showed up for the job interview. Let's just say that the interview was a simple formality. There were a few people who showed up, but the owners of the place told me that they had already chosen me the moment I walked through that door. They didn't care that I had no experience up to that point. They were just happy that I was going, and they knew they could trust me. And so that's when I started working at that Chinese restaurant. From the first day I worked with them, they were very nice to me. The orders were always close enough since the restaurant only shipped within 2 kilometers of me. The previous employee took a long time to ship, so I could travel with peace of mind knowing that I just needed to be on time with the shipments and didn't have to get there too fast. To tell the truth, the bar was set pretty low. I admit that I was surprised that my bosses would not give me an answer as to what happened to the previous delivery drivers. According to my bosses, they all just stopped coming overnight. To tell you the truth, it seemed a little odd, but I didn't care enough to inquire further. After all, they were ancient history, and I wouldn't do anything to get fired. After a few months, everything was going pretty well at work. The clients were always the same, and they already knew me. I was very comfortable without leaving my delivery zone. But one night, everything changed. It was a completely normal night. There was a lot of movement, which made sense since it was Friday. By that time, they had already hired someone new to help me. I didn't think it was necessary, but I didn't think they were going to fire me either, since I was really working very well. At that moment, I was waiting in the restaurant when I received a call from the new girl. She asked me to deliver an order for her, as her bike was broken down. She asked me not to say anything to the bosses, as she was afraid she would get fired if I did. I told my boss that I had to go do something, and even though I had no other delivery, he accepted without any problem, but they were about to close anyway. When I took the girl's order, she thanked me and waited for her boyfriend to go to where she was staying to fix her bike. The house I had to deliver the food to was strange. First of all, it was beyond the delivery limit, and the house was quite far away from everything. At the time, I didn't suspect anything unusual. I saw when my boss gave the girl the address, so I knew this delivery was real. Once I got to the place, I noticed that the door was open. I rang the doorbell, expecting someone to come out. But instead, I heard a noise. I could hear the voice of an elderly lady calling for help from the house. The lady said she couldn't get up and cried for help. I ran down the small hallway of the house to help the lady, but something made me stop. Something was wrong. Why was the door open? Wasn't it too strange that just at the moment I arrived, a lady that I couldn't see wanted me to enter a house with the door open in the middle of nowhere? And on top of that, with the lights off. Although this seemed very strange to me, I continued walking down the hallway, but with more caution and my eyes wide open. I was about to finish the small hallway and reach the old lady, and it was there when I made the discovery that may have saved my life. On the other side of the hallway, there was a window, and that window reflected someone else. It wasn't the old lady. A person was walking, hiding at the end of the corridor. Although I couldn't see the person, I could see her silhouette in the darkness, barely illuminated by the light coming from the outside. It was at that moment that I realized that I didn't have to be there. I turned around and started running quickly towards my bike. As soon as I reacted, someone behind me started chasing me, grabbed my hair, and threw me to the ground. I scratched my attacker's face, which made him let go of me. And before two other men behind him could help him, I got to my bike and accelerated as quickly as possible. The ride to work was horrendous. I kept crying because of what I had just experienced, but I was safe. No one was following me, and at this point, they wouldn't be either. I arrived at the restaurant in tears, just before my boss closed. All the other employees had already left. Only he was left. And when he saw me crying, he invited me into his office. I told him everything that happened. And he was white. He couldn't believe that something like this could happen. And he was very sad and nervous about what happened. He left me sitting there, drinking a glass of water, while he called my parents and the police. At that moment, I finally felt calm. It was all over. At my most vulnerable moment, my boss grabbed a rope and started to hang me. I didn't understand what was happening. I was so scared. I was in complete shock.
Damn it, Anna. That delivery trip was not for you. You should have warned me that the new girl couldn't go.
Why?
And to top it off, you have the nerve to run off and hurt one of my associates. Do you know how much trouble you got me into? Are you aware I didn't want to kill you? You made me do this.
I was running out of air. I needed to act. I needed to do something, and fast. I reached down to grab the glass of water and smashed it over my head. My boss was confused, but quickly recovered and went after me again. I quickly got on the bike, but before I could start it, he lunged at me and threw me off the bike. Before I could do anything, he put his hands on my neck and continued to choke me. This time, I had no way to defend myself. He was going to kill me. I tried to throw punches everywhere, but they didn't hurt him. I was losing consciousness when something happened. A group of friends who were going dancing rushed towards my boss, pulling him off and hitting him. They came up to me to see if I was okay, and crying, I asked them to call the police. While the police arrived, the guys stayed with me, holding my boss. My boss had a huge look of panic and despair on his face, and he kept crying. When the police arrived, I told them everything that had happened. At first, they arrested my boss for attempted murder. Soon after, the whole truth came out, and it was much worse than I could have imagined. To seek protection, my boss told the police everything and ratted out everyone involved. He was in deep debt to the mob. He couldn't afford to pay them all the money he owned, so he resorted to another means of payment. He sent them young characters that they kidnapped. Do you know what they did with them? They would kill them and sell their organs. If there were any family members, friends, or partners who approached the police, they would also disappear. That would have been the fate of the new girl if I wasn't standing in the way. And when she found out, she called me in tears, apologizing and thanking me for having had her boss arrested. Today, we still keep in touch, and we are friends. I still can't help but think how close I came to dying that night. I came close to dying in three different situations. And the only thing that saved my life was the fact that it was Friday, and the guys who saved me were going dancing, but they were lost. Today, I'm a graduate, and I'm already in healthcare. I see a lot of blood and things that no one would like to see. But you know, after that night, I feel like I'm alive for something. And that something is to gather my courage and save as many lives as I can.
Do you know how it feels to lose a loved one? When my boyfriend died, everyone said they understood me, and everyone comforted me. But I feel like no one ever understood what happened. And you know what? Okay, I wouldn't want anyone else to. But you know, if there is one thing I've learned in life, it's that it can always be worse. And just when I thought I was at my lowest low, just when I thought I had hit rock bottom, I had an even worse night. And it all started at Taco Bell. It all started a few weeks ago. My friends insisted on taking me to Taco Bell to lift my spirits. You know how they are. They think fast food and a few laughs can cure anything. The only reason I agreed was because everyone told me I should do it. A night trying to distract myself and not being in my room crying didn't seem like a bad idea. Going to Taco Bell, not the best idea. That was my boyfriend's favorite place, but my friends didn't know that. The thought of going back to that place filled me with a strange sense of discomfort. But at the insistence of my friends, I finally gave in. After all, what could go wrong? As you can imagine from my age, my boyfriend's death was not natural. He didn't die of any disease. And even though I tell everyone he died from an accident, only the police, his family, and I know the truth. Troy was murdered. His body was found in a ditch after a night when he just went to get food at a restaurant. He never told me which one, but for all I know, it could have been at this Taco Bell. His death was a mystery. They never found the culprit. And the idea that someone could hurt someone as sweet and loving as he was filled me with rage and pain. I was still haunted by the question of who could do such a thing and why. I always told myself that if I saw who did it, I would kill them. But that seemed like a far-fetched fantasy. When we arrived, I admit, I got really hungry from the smell of the tacos. I tried not to think about anything I would normally think about and just distract myself with my friends. We sat down at a newly vacated table, and I immediately avoided going over to order. The one in front of us at the cashier's desk was James. James is a man, uncomfortable, to say the least. I don't have a bad relationship with him, and all my friends don't either, although none of them would consider him a friend. Make no mistake, most of the time, the man is quite normal, but what always made us uncomfortable about him was that James had the biggest crush on me, and that made him act creepy. He never made a pass at me, but he was pushy. So James got mad at him
when he snuck up on James to ask me out. I didn't know what was in store for him, because I got even angrier. Anyway, a friend went to order lunch. I knew James would recognize him, but it was better than nothing. A few minutes later, my friend brought the tacos, and we were all ready to eat. Everyone's tacos looked excellent, except mine. Mine had a weird shape, very different from the rest, as if it had been tampered with. I also noticed an excess of meat on it, which normally would be good, but this meat was different, as if it had been cut by someone inexperienced. I looked at it uncomfortably for a while, and finally, I mustered enough courage to take a bite of the taco. The metallic, putrid taste hit me like a punch in the stomach. I spit the food into my napkin and looked at my friends in horror. My friends stopped eating their tacos and looked at them, but didn't notice anything strange about theirs. Just then, James saw what had happened and came running over to the table, as if he had to by protocol. When James arrived, I got quite angry and took it out on him, yelling that my cue was rotten, to which James replied in surprise.
Oh, that's rude. I made it especially for you. I thought you might like it.
I swallowed hard, feeling a lump in my throat. Is this taco special? How did he know I was coming here with my friends? I tried to keep my composure as my friends complained about the taco to James. But inside, I was panicking. James, what do you mean the taco is special? That's when James leaned over to me, his stinky breath filling my nose.
I know you've been grieving since your boyfriend's death, and I wanted to give you a special gift.
My heart pounded in my chest as I watched helplessly as James pulled something out of his pocket and placed it on my table. It was a worn photograph of my boyfriend with a deep cut on his neck. Horror gripped me as I realized what I was seeing. James, he had killed my boyfriend? I felt nauseous as I looked at the picture. I had always promised myself to kill whoever had done this. But at this moment, I was paralyzed. My friends were trying to peek at the photo, and as they did, their eyes widened and they recoiled in shock.
At first, he rejected me because of him, and that made me very angry. But then I understood something. I would also get angry if someone came onto me and I had a boyfriend. So I killed him, so you wouldn't have that problem anymore.
You're sick! Get away from her!
So I kept watching you at home. You looked sad. If I had asked you out, I'm sure you would have turned me down. I knew why it was you were sad. Because you had lost your boyfriend. And that was my fault.
No.
I knew I owed you something, and I felt very guilty. So when I read that you were coming here, I had to do something for you. I wanted a part of him to always be with you. So I dug up your boyfriend from my yard and used him to make your taco.
Horror came over me as I stared at my plate in disgust. The taco I had been about to eat. The one I had taken a bite out of was filled with Troy's meat. My friends watched in disbelief as I stood up from the table, trembling in terror. My friends lunged to attack him, but before any of them could reach him, I did. I lunged at him and tackled him to the ground. At that moment, something took hold of me. I just hit him again and again until my hands couldn't hit him anymore. Meanwhile, he just looked at me confused, not understanding if he had done something wrong. Once security pulled me away from him, who was almost unconscious, I ran for the exit, tears running down my cheeks as I struggled to breathe. I was terrified and confused. I just wanted to go home and keep crying. Finally, I stepped out into the sunlight, feeling the fresh air burn my lungs. I looked back one last time, seeing the silhouette of James behind the door of the restaurant, trying to crawl away as my friends argued with the security men who stopped them from attacking him. Within minutes, the police were already at the Taco Bell, taking James away. As if Troy's death, coupled with what had happened that afternoon, wasn't traumatic enough, I had to relive it over and over again as I told the story to the cops. But this time, it was for something. Something had changed. Troy's killer was already in police custody. Did that make me feel better? Not at all. But at least, I knew this man would never hurt anyone again.
When you hear about a successful relationship, what do you picture? Two people that understand each other, love each other, and help each other to be better people every day? But the one and only relationship of my life landed me in jail, and honestly, it wasn't even my fault. I knew being a cop, it was not going to be easy to date. Women usually avoided men in my profession, and I was okay with it, as I loved my job. At one office-related event, I met Emily. She was the only daughter of a deputy. Emily and I hit it off from the very first meeting. Pretty quickly, we went from the talking stage to the dating stage, and soon we found ourselves in a committed relationship. Emily was a photographer and often traveled for a job. She was an amazing photographer and even made me her model a couple of times, as I had a good physique and a pretty handsome face. I'd fallen in love with her pretty quickly. I'd never thought I would land an amazing woman like her. I guess when your relationship is new, you often tend to ignore the red flags. Emily knew that having a relationship with me wasn't going to be easy. She had grown up seeing her father always stressed from working. Being with me wasn't going to be any different, especially as I was one of the most promising police officers. She already knew that due to confidentiality, I couldn't tell her details about my job, which case I was working on, or even where I was at times. And I knew that she was okay with it. Honestly, her being a cop's daughter was a perk in my eyes, as she would be more understanding towards me and my job. But the truth was far from the expectation. One night when she was sleeping over at my place, I found her going through my cell phone, checking it while I was asleep in the bedroom. I wasn't furious, rather disappointed, as this proved she didn't trust me. I was head over heels in love with her, and couldn't even think of another woman, let alone look at one. That night was the first time we had a big fight. She ended up storming out of my place in the middle of the night. I was so hurt that I didn't even try to stop her. All I asked from her was her trust. Plus, sharing with her the details about my job was equal to putting her life in jeopardy. I dealt with all sorts of people, and most of them were not good human beings. I didn't want to put her in any danger. But for some reason, Emily never understood this simple thing. Nevertheless, we made up and were back to normal. But since that day, her insecurities kept on growing. One evening, we were both out on a date in a fancy restaurant. One of my college classmates, Jessie, walked up to our table. She, too, was out having dinner with her husband and her kids. In college, I was part of a tight-knit group of friends, and Jessie was a part of that group as well. I was so happy to see her after so many years. Jesse and I were chatting by our table, where Emily was the whole time. She heard every word of our exchange. I thought she would be delighted that I ran into a friend, but as soon as Jesse returned to her table, Emily bombarded me with questions. Some of them didn't even make sense. I was so frustrated. The poor woman was telling me all about her husband and kids who were a mere few feet away from us, and Emily was insecure. It wasn't as if I had a string of girlfriends before her. She was my first serious girlfriend, and she knew it. As months passed, we fought more and dated less. Our relationship was an emotional roller coaster. Once, when I was busy in an interrogation and couldn't reply to her text, Emily called me 24 times and sent me 50 texts asking where I was and what I was doing and if I was cheating on her. That was the last straw, as she had become a hindrance between me and my job. That night when I returned home, she was there, demanding answers and yelling at me. Sure, I loved her, but I loved my job and my peace of mind more. I decided to break things off with her as I thought our relationship was pointless. There was no mutual understanding or respect, and love wasn't enough to hold us together anymore. The moment I told her we were done, she slapped me and became so hyper-emotional that she picked up the paper cutter from my study table and slit her wrist. I was dumbfounded and realized how difficult it was going to be to separate myself from her. I did tend to her wrist, but very politely and calmly told her that it wasn't working. She was hysterical and blackmailed me that if I broke up with her, she would end herself. Just because we weren't compatible didn't mean I wished harm for her. I wanted her to live a happy life too. I tried talking to her father, the deputy, but he refused to listen to me. He told me that it was between me and his daughter, and he wished to not be a part of it. I wanted to tell him that she needed professional help, probably therapy, but he didn't have time for all this nonsense. We dated for a few more months, and things were hardly ideal, but I was managing, as I didn't want her to end her life. Emily was making me miserable, and I felt trapped in the relationship. That's when my department put me in charge of investigating a drug and murder case. Right away, I knew that this was going to be the biggest case of my life. If I solved it successfully with my team, I would definitely get a promotion. I was very serious about my career as a cop, and she knew that too. The deeper we went into investigating the case, the higher the stakes. Very soon into the investigation, we knew that very high and influential people were involved. I avoided telling anything about the case to her for obvious reasons, but as usual, she thought that I was hiding an affair from her. I was so focused on the investigation and following the leads that I was hardly ever home and didn't pay much attention to Emily. In a way, this case was proving to be a great distraction, giving me a break from her drama. My team and I were trained for this, and as we explored the leads, we were pretty close to cracking the case. Most of the time, if I was working in the field, interrogating a suspect or chasing a lead, I wouldn't pick up Emily's phone or answer her texts. I knew I was close, and I wanted to solve this case to establish myself as a capable cop. But Emily was having none of it. She even showed up at the police station unannounced, under the pretext of bringing everyone food. But what she really wanted to do was to check to see if I was busy working or cheating on her. Mind you, I never cheated on her or anyone. I thought cheating was unethical and a coward's way out of things. One night, when me and my team were following a tip we got about a drug shipment arriving in the city, we were off to a warehouse in which the drugs were supposed to be stored. We planned to catch the culprits red-handed. As expected, the shipment arrived, but the culprits had got wind of us being there. Shots were fired and the situation ended quickly. My team and I were trying to neutralize and arrest as many people involved as possible. But suddenly, I heard a shrill scream. It was Emily. To date, I have no clue how she got there, but she was held at gunpoint by one of the culprits. He demanded that we cease fire and let them walk away with the drugs, or else they were going to shoot her. One of my seniors who was on site with us tried to negotiate, but I could see the terror and misery in her eyes. It was a split-second decision. I pointed my gun at the culprit holding her and shot, but he moved at the last second, and the bullet went straight through Emily's head, killing her on the spot. The culprit pushed her body away and shot back at me. I was so shocked that I couldn't duck at the bullet as it pierced my left eye. The next thing I remember was waking up in a hospital bed with my hands cuffed to the bed and the left side of my face wrapped in bandages. I had lost my girlfriend and my eye. I was also being prosecuted for killing her as I disobeyed my superiors when they were negotiating with the culprit. Now I'm locked up in jail like a common criminal, waiting for the trials to end. Every time I open my right eye, I see Emily standing in the corner of the room, just staring at me. I don't know if it's her ghost haunting me or my mind playing tricks on me, but my life will never be the same again. As a former employee of a branch of Taco Bell fast food restaurants, today I'm about to tell you a few horrific incidents that question the quality and hygiene of all the fast food restaurants. This happened 6 years ago, back when I was working in a Taco Bell restaurant part-time. Our manager was a weird guy. All he cared about was profits. He didn't care if his employees were overworked, sick, or even dying. He made us work till I could no longer stand, and he was always yelling at us. We always secretly wished he'd quit and we would get a new manager, but that never happened until one day. It was an unusually busy Friday. Customers were in and out of the restaurant constantly, and as usual, we were understaffed. Most of us were busy either preparing orders or taking them. Our manager, as usual, was walking around the restaurant in the kitchen yelling at us to hurry up. Most of the days we hardly took our breaks, but that day we knew we had to sacrifice our breaks completely to be able to complete all the orders we were getting. Apparently, the cafe right across the street from our Taco Bell had shut down, so all their customers were coming into our restaurant. While I was standing next to the burner cooking some meat with a coworker of mine, she said that there was probably an oil leak from one of the stoves. When I looked down to the floor, there was a pale yellowish liquid behind my shoes. I knew what could happen if we kept cooking in spilled oil, so we turned off our stoves and started finding the source of the leaking oil. By then, it was everywhere, and all the kitchen staff was looking around as yellowish oily liquid seeped through their shoes. Everyone was looking around, and when they realized that it was oil, they began to look at us and the stove. It was as if the entire kitchen had come to a halt, as no one could figure out where the liquid was coming from. Right then, our manager stepped into the kitchen, and when he saw us all just standing there looking around the kitchen, he began yelling at us. One of the employees pointed out that oil was leaking in the kitchen, and it had covered the entire kitchen floor. The manager ignored us all and asked us to keep doing our work. Even though we knew it was hazardous, we continued working as none of us wanted to be fired. A few minutes later, one of the employees noticed that the color of the liquid all over the kitchen floor had changed to light brown, and then it was brown, as if the residue of leftover oil was spilling all around our floor. The situation was getting out of hand by the minute, and someone had to do something, but no one had the guts to go against the manager. Not even me. So we continued working. One of the employees dropped a plate on the ground, and when he picked it up, it was covered in the brown stuff on the floor. He mentioned that the liquid smelled funny, like rancid oil. That's when one of the employees figured out what it was, and they rushed to the washroom. Sure enough, the toilet in the men's restroom was overflowing with piss, poo, and whatnot, which was spread throughout the kitchen. That means for 2 hours or so, we were cooking food standing in shit. Literal. Human waste. That was the breaking point, and all the employees decided to call a plumbing guy and a cleanup company to deal with the mess. The manager, however, did not approve of it, and didn't think it was a big enough deal to close the restaurant. But we'd had enough, and we ended up closing the Taco Bell early that evening. Unfortunately, the issue was so big that the restaurant remained closed for the next 2 days. Although we got paid leave, the manager wasn't fired. The second incident happened almost 2 years into my job at Taco Bell. It was a Monday evening and there was no rush. For once, our weird manager wasn't there and we were all happy. An old man about 70 or 75 years old walked into the restaurant. He was dressed as if he was still living in the 80s. He was carrying a walking stick and wore thick glasses over his nose. I was working by the stove as usual, and one of the employees took his order and gave it to me. It was quite weird, as instead of ordering a combo or a taco from our menu, he had customized his order. To say the least, it was definitely weird. I tried my best to make his order exactly how he wanted it, but I had a gut feeling that this guy was going to throw a tantrum over it no matter what. Nevertheless, I made his order to the best of my ability and handed it over to the front table for him to pick up. After a few minutes, I heard a commotion from the dining area. I went there, and sure enough, the old man was pissed over his order, not being done right. One of my co-workers tried to calm him down, but he demanded to speak with the cook. So I stepped ahead and told him that we rarely took customized orders, that I'd done my best to make it as he wanted, and that he should be respectful towards all our employees. The man was so triggered by my words that he almost turned red. It was comical and scary at the same time. I was worried he would have a heart attack right there in our restaurant and die. But fortunately, he didn't. Instead, he threw his half-eaten taco in my face and then grabbed a sauce bottle and squirted the sauce in my eyes. Before any one of us could react and do something, he just walked out of the restaurant with the speed of lightning, impossible for a man of his age. I wiped my face and ran out of the restaurant to look for the rascal, but he was nowhere to be seen. We never saw the man again, but that was the worst customer experience I've ever had in my life. The last story is the most disgusting incident that happened, and that was also the last day I worked in the Taco Bell, because after that day, that branch of Taco Bell got shut down. We had hired a new girl, as most of the staff had either quit or been fired by the idiot manager. This girl seemed a bit off from the first day. She came late for her shifts and sometimes didn't even show up. One or two times, she'd even come in drunk. However, that day, this new girl, Amy, and I were working on the stove. It was usual for me, but she was acting up again. I thought it was one of her usual tricks to get out of work early or to take a long break. She was shaking weirdly and leaning over the boiling oil. I tried to ask her if she was okay, but she just flipped me off, so I decided to mind my own business. That day, there weren't too many customers. A lady was standing by the cash counter giving her order. She was looking directly at us in the kitchen. It was common for customers to look in the kitchen, so I didn't mind much. That's when Amy leaned over so close to the boiling oil. I was worried for a second, and then she puked into it. There were half-digested pieces of taco meat and shells in the oil. The woman took one look at what had happened and walked out of the Taco Bell. A few minutes later, there were cops and people from the health department. And that day was my last day working at a Taco Bell or any such fast food place.